This is the House Church in China, a podcast that shares stories from the house churches in China. My name is Ryan Zhang, one of the co-hosts of this podcast. If you're listening to this right now, I hope it's because you have been following our podcast in the last three seasons. Thank you very much for listening. My co-writer and I are currently in the middle of making season four, and we hope to share that with you later this year. But in 2026, we're doing something a little bit different. My former co-host, Hannah Nation, has been working with the Center for House Church Theology. And starting this year, she has decided to switch to full-time with that organization. However, the Lord has not left me alone, and He has spared all of you from my monologues. So let me introduce you to my new co-host, Beth Gregory. Beth, please say hi and tell everyone about yourself.
Hi, it's great to be here. So my name is Beth Gregory. I live in the Los Angeles area with my husband and our three kids. And I've been working with Chinese Christians for nearly 20 years now, actually more than 20 years now, which is crazy. My husband is a pastor. And in addition to working part-time with China Partnership and helping to edit and write, I homeschool our kids. So hi, it's good to be here.
And you may not have heard Beth's voice before, but you are probably familiar with her work because Beth is also our brilliant writer for the last three seasons. If you have enjoyed our podcast, it's most likely because Beth is such a good storyteller. I'm excited to have her join me as a new co-host.
Yeah. So like you said, Ryan, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently this year. So we're going to keep going, like you said, with season four. It's going to be coming out later this year where we explore a story in depth. But in the meantime, we wanted to start a new episode coming out about once a month, exploring various topics and stories from the Chinese House Church a little bit more in real time. And we really do want to always conclude and kind of focus on not only what is happening, but how we can be praying for house churches and for believers in these areas.
And why are we doing this new format? Well, China is a big country with almost 1.5 billion people. We can say one thing, that it will be true for a lot of people in China. But we can also say the opposite, it will be true for a lot of people as well. We want to take some time each month to dive into different aspects of Chinese society and the Chinese church. And we hope that this will give you a little bit more complete and nuanced view of the house churches.
We're hoping it'll give us a chance to kind of not just talk about what we're seeing, but really reflect on it and reflect on how we can be learning from our brothers and sisters in China. Another thing we're really excited about is we are hoping to have the chance to bring in different guests to share about what they are seeing and learning in China. So we don't want to be talking about what Ryan and I have observed, but we want to have a conversation with others who love China and have seen just the really awesome things that God is and has been doing there over the last decades. So we believe that this can be really big encouragement to those of us in the Western church. And hopefully also a reminder to Chinese Christians that they aren't isolated, but they belong to us and they're a part of God's family that spans the globe.
Yeah, so we hope you could tune in, you would join us and send us your questions. We also would love for you to join us to pray for China. As Beth said, we would end by talking about how we can be praying for each of these topics each month. So please join us. But with that said, for our first monthly discussion, we want to level set and give you an overview of what Christianity looks like in China right now.
Yeah, this is a really complex topic. So start big, Chinese Christians include Catholics and then, of course, Protestants of many different faith traditions. Now, in China, there's a really sharp divide between Protestant believers in house churches and Christians in the official government church. So that is a deep subject, and we'll talk more about that split in a moment. There's also a strong history of rural, usually uneducated believers who worship in countryside house churches. And then there's a more modern house church movement, which has been centered in metropolitan areas and is often led by educated young and middle-aged professionals. So The short answer to the question that probably everybody is asking, which is how many Christians are there in China? And the answer is we really just don't know. So in 2023, Pew Research Center did a survey and it was very official. And their study conclusion is that this is unclear and they can't tell us. I thought it was super interesting on the page Pew put out about how many Christians there are in China. They actually don't even include any sort of official estimate. But I'm not going to leave you without a number, but it's going to be so huge as to be more confusing, probably. So I have seen sources who've put the number as low as 23 million and as high as 116 million. So that is a massive difference, obviously. So the reason this is so complicated and hard to figure out is because it's really just not possible to do accurate surveys of religious belief in China. However, with all that said, the Pew survey does seem to suggest that in more recent years, the explosive growth of Christianity, which we definitely observed going on in China throughout the 90s and aughts, has slowed down and leveled off.
Yeah, just to put that into perspective, even if you split 23 million and 160 million down the middle, that's close to 70, 80 million. That's more than a quarter, almost a third of the US population. That's not a small number. But in China's, 1.4, 1.5 billion population, that is still a small percentage. So with close to about 100 million Christians in China, we can expect a lot of diversities and complexity, just like in the US. But there's one fairly clear divide among Chinese churches, and that's the divide between the three self churches and house churches. Now, the three self church is short for the Three Self Patriotic Movement. Three self stands for self governance, self support, and self propagation. Those all may sound like great things, right? Those three self movements actually. Those all may sound like great things, but the Three Self Movement is actually a campaign established by the Chinese government in the 1950s to sever ties between the Chinese churches and the global church. So up to today, the Three Self churches are still under the regulation and governance of the Chinese government. They're registered with the Chinese government, their pastors are trained and approved by the Communist Party, and their teachings are limited and even directed by what the government allows them to teach. So house churches are basically just the opposite of that. What makes a house church different from a three self church is not that they only meet in small groups in private homes, even though they started off like that. The biggest distinction between house churches and three self churches is that they are not registered with the government, and they refuse to come under the governance of the state. Now, many of them did start meeting in homes, especially in rural areas. But these days, house churches also meet in office buildings, hotel conference rooms, parks, online, and many other creative ways. And depending on the security situation in various parts of the country, some are larger and more public, some have to divide into smaller congregations and groups and maintain a lower profile. But they've all kept the title house church because it connects them to the traditions they come from. So that's the one major distinction in the house churches. In the churches in China. But Beth, can you tell us more about their theological differences?
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. So initially, the theological divide between the three self government churches and the house churches really tracked along the sort of liberal versus fundamentalist divide in the West that was really gaining momentum in the early 1900s. Now, the three self patriotic movement, when it started in the 1950s, it was founded and led by more liberal theologians who were influenced by more theologically liberal missionaries from the West. So the liberal theology was one reason that these folks were more open to collaborating with the Chinese government back in the 1950s. Now, on the other hand, house church fathers came from a more fundamentalist, pietistic tradition. They believed the Bible is the inerrant word of God, that Jesus physically lived, died, and was raised from the dead, and that one day Christ will return to judge the whole world. way back in the 1950s, these house church fathers believed that registering with the government and the Three Self movement would be a slippery slope toward liberal theology, and that in doing so, they would be selling out to the communist government, which, as we all know, is actually atheistic. So, even today, this theological divide between the house church and the Three Self Church still stands. And because of this, house churches still refuse to register with the government. But in addition to just these theological issues and differences, there are some other major reasons that house churches refuse to register with the government. Ryan, would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, like I mentioned, China is a complex country, and there are, of course, many other complicated reasons why the Three Self Church refuses to join the government. But being independent from government control is just one of them. And that's one of the irony of the Three Self Church, that although the Three Self Church claim to be self-governing, they're actually quite controlled by the state. But this control goes beyond theological beliefs and politics. It has a lot to do with allegiance as well. And to explain this point, let me ask you this, Beth. Do you like martial arts movies?
It's not my genre, typically.
Well, but for those who do like it, and if you're familiar with Kung Fu, Chinese Kung Fu movies, you've probably heard of people like Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee, and you may have heard of a place called the Shaolin Temple in northern China, which is commonly referred to as the origin place of Kung Fu. And the other Hollywood star from China, Jet Li, his first breakout role in the 1980s was a fighting monk in the Shaolin Temple. The Shaolin Temple is a historic Buddhist temple dating way back to 495 AD. It has centuries of religious history and survived many Chinese dynasties. And it's still a very popular tourist attraction. And when I visited in 2011, they put on a very elaborate Kung Fu performance for us tourists. But in the last decade, a new thing started to take place regularly in the temple. The monks in the temple started to raise Chinese flag and sing national anthem regularly. Well, now, what does an ancient Buddhist temple have to do with the Chinese national flag and national anthem? Well, that's the heart of the matter. China's religious regulations go beyond Christian churches. They want to control all religious faiths. The Communist Party is atheistic. But at the center of the problem is not so much what you believe, but who is your Lord. You can believe in all kinds of things, whether it's Buddhism, Taoism, folk religion, ancestor worship, Christianity, even Islam. But as long as you acknowledge that the Chinese government is your highest Lord and has your highest allegiance, and they have the authority to regulate what you believe, then the government actually gives you a certain amount of autonomy to practice religion. That's why you see ancient Buddhist temples like the Shaolin Temple holding flag-raising ceremonies, because that's a signal to the state that we acknowledge you as our Lord. And that's precisely what the house church pastors refuse to acknowledge. They are happy to respect and obey the government, as taught in the New Testament, but they can only give their allegiance to one Lord, and they only acknowledge one King, and that is Jesus Christ, the Son of God. That's why they continue to face pressure and persecution from the Chinese government today.
Yeah, now the history of this persecution, the first wave happened really just immediately after the Three Self Patriotic Movement was established. So back in the 1950s, many of the fathers of what is now the House Church Movement were pressured to join and sign up with the Three Self Movement. And those who refused to join were imprisoned and tortured. And things went from bad to worse as the Cultural Revolution took place in the 1960s and 70s. Now, in the 1980s, China went through a period that is known as reform and opening. And as that title implies, China opened up to the rest of the world in a lot of ways. And a lot of things were reformed. And a lot of the persecution and pressure that house church Christians had been experienced were lightened. In this period, house churches had a chance to emerge from underground, and they began to go out from the rural areas and enter into the cities. Now, these newer urban churches were often very strongly influenced by Western missionaries and theologians. During this period of the reform and opening, China was flooded with folks from overseas, and a lot of the church members and leaders came to faith in university and were either evangelized or disciples by missionaries who often were from the West or many also from South Korea. So these new urban churches that began to develop were more intellectual than the strong, simple, in some ways very pure faith of the rural countryside house churches. And the newer churches were also more strongly tied to the global church through the personal relationships that many of these believers had. This period of openness that the house churches went through was really vital to the theological maturity of Chinese house churches. They were more connected both to the world and to their historical inheritance of their Christian faith. But since 2018, persecution has begun to ramp up again. Now, in 2018, some religious regulations went into effect. And in that same year, there was a large-scale persecution of a well-known church in Chengdu and its outspoken pastor, Wang Yi. In December of 2018, hundreds of believers at this church, Early Rain Covenant Church in Chengdu, were arrested. Most of those were eventually released, but some did go on to spend months to years in jail. And Early Rain's pastor, Wang Yi, is actually still in jail right now. And his sentence, he's sentenced to remain in jail through December of 2027. But it's not just that this happened for one church. Over the last few years, other house churches have also been experiencing increasing levels of pressure and persecution. And it's actually ramped up even more over the last 6 months or so. In October of 2025, Zion, a well-known house church based in Beijing but with congregants across the country, faced its own crackdown. Dozens of their leaders were arrested, and many of those believers still remain in prison today. Even more recently, in January, Early Rain in Chengdu experienced another large-scale crackdown, and many of their remaining leaders were arrested. Many of them are in prison right now, and there's no word on when they will get out, but the charges they are expected to face seem to be very serious. So, because more of these religious regulations have gone into effect, the reality for most Chinese believers is that the landscape is harsh, and really expectations are only that it's going to become more difficult for them.
Yeah, and that's a very difficult and sobering reality. But that brings us to today. And that's a very broad view of the history of the Chinese house church in the last 60 to 70 years. And we hope this helps you to put our stories and conversations into context. But before we finish today, Beth, I want to ask you this. You've met many house church pastors and brothers and sisters in the last, last two decades as you work with them. What stands out to you as you talk to them and get to know them?
I think the first thing that I always really like to keep in mind is that these believers are a whole lot like us. Obviously, we share a common humanity and a common faith. There are lots of differences in our circumstances, our cultures, but underneath that, we have so much more in common. All of us are normal, fallen humans, struggling to follow God and in need of His grace and mercy. Sometimes I feel like it's very easy, like there's a big temptation to try to kind of valorize or idealize these persecuted Christians and the circumstances in which they live. But for me, it's just really helpful to remember that our Chinese brothers and sisters have more similarities to us than they do differences from us. The second thing I was kind of reflecting on is that I've always really been struck by how Chinese Christians just really expect God to act and answer prayer. And whenever I talk to them, I feel like I'm always reminded that God sees and God cares, and He really and truly does intervene in this world. So I'm probably conjecturing a little bit here, but one thing I've thought about is that I wonder if this is not because Christianity is a little bit younger in China than in the West. And so many Chinese Christians have either kind of personally experienced just God's supernatural work, or a lot of them who maybe have not seen these miraculous stories have living memory of how God did intervene during times of severe persecution, such as the Cultural Revolution in the 60s and 70s. The last thing I really want to talk about is that Chinese Christians always talk about walking the road of the cross. And when they say these words, what they mean is that when believers suffer for faith, Christians are sharing in the sufferings of Christ, and they're actually even closer to Jesus through this suffering than they would be if they lived a peaceful and smooth and easy life. So I think as Americans, we in particular tend to be really uncomfortable with suffering. So as an American, I need to be reminded that God uses trials to help us know him more, and that even persecution can itself be a mark of God's love and favor to his children. Yeah, that's what I was reflecting on. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I am really struck by how much they pray and the expectancy that come with their prayers, because I also feel inspired by them to pray more in my life and also look for God's answer in various parts of my life, and that's been a huge encouragement to me. And like you said, I'm very struck by their drive toward, I would call, the downward mobility, as you've said, their embrace of the role of the cross. I was reading recently a book called The Highest Exam, which is a book about the Chinese college entrance exam. Every year for a few days in early July, almost the entire country in China was shut down because millions of high school students are taking their college entrance exams. And how you do in this exam when you're 18 years old will have the biggest impact on your life. It affects whether you go to college or where you go to college, what kinds of job you will have after college, what status of society you belong to after you graduate. So those who score well on the exam will have a chance to shoot up to the top of Chinese society, and those who score poorly will be relegated to the bottom. It's believed to be an objective metric that gives people an illusion of social mobility, right? If you work hard, you do well, your fate's in your hand. And so kids from a very young age start taking tutoring classes to prepare for this exam 15 years later. It's the biggest tournament in China, or maybe in the whole world, the biggest tournament that people compete against. So people compete against each other throughout their whole childhood. And Chinese Christians just refuse to participate in this kind of rat race. They have chosen to live sacrificially, putting their reputation, their comfort, even their freedom on the line. So when they're marginalized and looked down upon, it actually gives them another kind of freedom. They're not trapped in a materialistic society. They're not obsessed about wealth and social connections. They're not suspicious or jealous of their other people's success. They can love, they can be honest, they can care for the outcasts, and they carry the cross and follow Jesus, trusting that God, who raised Jesus from the dead, will one day also raise them up. To that end, Beth, how can we be praying for the Christians in China this month?
Practically, I want to encourage everybody, you can use the China Partnership website and blog as a tool to guide specific prayers for Chinese believers. In January and February of this year, we've been praying for persecuted Christians. And throughout the year, we'll continue interviewing and praying for churches in various cities across China. So, one simple and very important prayer, though, is that Chinese Christians will remember that they are not alone. They are part of a global church family, and their brothers and sisters in the faith that we here remember them and care for them.
Yeah, thank you. And I will be praying for the health of the Chinese church under persecution. Persecution is like a pressure cooker. It refines us, it purifies us, but also exposes a lot of our weaknesses. Like a 5-ton truck driving over a bridge, it could expose a lot of the cracks on the bridge. And I'm praying that the Chinese church, house churches, our brothers and sisters there could stay faithful and healthy, and that God would continue to guide them and give them strength. So, Thank you for listening to us for our first month discussion. We hope that you could join us. We want to hear from you. And what questions do you have for us? And we hope that you could also join us to pray for the Chinese house churches. And let us know what you want to know about the house churches in China.
Please share your thoughts with us by emailing us at info@chinapartnership.org.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Talk to you next month.